home and garden combined with a twist of the past. Welcome to April, and it's still raining here. What's the weather like in your area, Teresa?
Oh my gosh, it is spring paradise. All the trees are blooming, and it smells so heavenly, and the lilacs are just about to bloom. Oh my gosh, it's really gorgeous right now.
We've had some pretty good weather. I mean, it's raining today, which talk about spring fever. I really, really want to get out there because I don't know if you've seen on my Facebook page, Teresa, but I'm building a living wall. It's kind of been a challenge, but I finally have got it to the structure of it to hold the soil in. It's standing upright. It seems to be balanced. And you'd be proud of me because I just planted some violets, some little.
Cool. Yeah. You're going to have pictures on your Facebook page?
I'm actually going to do a blog post. I'm actually going to make a separate page on our Nest in Style blog. I've got a little bit of interest of people wanting to know how to build their own living wall. And, why not learn from my mistakes so that way other people are more successful. So
be sure and tell us how you're going to handle irrigation in your blog post, too. I think that's great. So people tune in.
Yes. Jamie's- I know. If spring fever. I've got it all over.
I know. Those living walls were such a big hit at the last flower and garden shows, as you know. And it's the same way here. I mean, I'm in here recording this podcast with you, Jamie, instead of being out in that beautiful heavenly 70.
I know. So we'll get this over and done with and that way.
But it's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. I know. So thank you for joining me today on a nice sunny day in your area, but it's completely pouring rain here. But you know what?
Absolutely.
That's what I think is great is, if people do have the ability to download this podcast, they can listen to it while they are out in the garden. You don't need to tune
us out.
Take
us everywhere.
I know. Take us in your car.
What's our recent progress on the iTunes?
It's coming. It's...
This is the longest build-up for everybody.
I know. Ooh. I'm not doing this on purpose. It's not a mind game with our listeners. We're building a separate site. So, folks, that's what we're doing is we're building a separate site to host the Nest in Style podcast on. So it's just in order to get it right and look nice and work properly, it takes a little bit of time. So thanks for your patience.
I think that's very important, which is why it's like the perfect time to be talking about what's coming up, don't you think?
It's perfect time. We've got a little three-part series coming up. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, just like everybody else out there in podcast land, we are totally thinking about what can we be doing to our gardens right now? And do we need to pull in expert help? That's a lot of what we're going to be focusing on in the next three issues and episodes, excuse me. And these three women that we are interviewing all represent different skill sets. The first one you're going to hear is a feng shui consultant who is originally from Britain but now lives in Boise, and she specializes in long-distance consultations. And she's going to talk about how this ancient art and science that was developed over 3,000 years ago in China can not only be used within your home but also around your home in your garden space to bring in all that positive energy, or qi, as they call it in Chinese.
Okay, so can I just interrupt you? How long have you mispronounced feng shui? I mean, when you first saw the word, or the two words, I should say, feng shui, how did you think it was pronounced?
I think it was one of those words like I was really just afraid to pronounce it.
I always thought it was feng shui. Feng shui. I'm so glad I did not say that too many times out in public. Feng shui is how it's pronounced, huh, Teresa?
Feng shui, that's right. And so that's going to be the first episode which we're going to feature next. But before we do, we actually have some really exciting guests coming up. Right after that, we've got Susan Cohen from the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. And she's a professional landscape designer. And as I understand from Jamie, she brings a new perspective to what Rebecca Sweet told us about in landscape design. It should be very interesting to contrast and compare the two. Our third episode will feature gardening coaches, such as Christina Salwitz, who lives in the Seattle area. we really have a whole wide range of different climates being represented and different types of professional skills.
Yeah, so I mean, you'll learn. And hopefully the series will help you decide which professional you need for your own landscape or garden.
Right.
You know, and I just have to say, and you spoke with Linda, I actually haven't had a chance to speak with her, but I can say personally with Susan Cohan and Christina Salwitz, they are both, I mean, obviously they're professional. They're generous with their time and their information. They're more than willing to help. I mean, Christina has actually helped me in some of my own projects that I have here. She has, you know, firsthand knowledge of how certain plants grow in the Northwest, which is really helpful.
And Christina actually was one of five landscape designers and gardening writers that I asked for my blog, Season of Wisdom, to give me their favorite winter plants. So Christina gave me some great winter plant suggestions for the Northwest. And if you haven't checked it out, Jamie, definitely go check it out. She has a great eye. And as Jamie said, by listening to all these different women talk, you'll be able to decide what's best for your garden. Can the ancient art and science of feng shui be applied to your garden? And can it help you transform your life? These are the questions that we're concerning ourselves with in this interview, and I'm pleased to sit with Linda Binns, who is a feng shui specialist and consultant in Boise, Idaho. Linda is also an author, teacher, and professional speaker, and she recently wrote the book Feng Shui for Your Relationships, Changing Your Environment to Create Better Relationships. And I should also add, Linda is the publisher of Idaho's Woman's Journal as well. So Linda, thanks so much for taking a moment and coming on Nest and Style for us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me, Teresa.
My pleasure. Could you start out, Linda, by explaining to us what is exactly feng shui?
Yes, of course. It's many people get confused. They think they hear feng shui and they think it's either to do with interior design or that it's just about moving furniture. And while those can be aspects of feng shui, it really is so much more than that. In essence, it's about energy, and it's about the energy that's in our environment and how that impacts us and everything that affects the energy. So it can be, you know, a building, the structure itself, what it's made of, the surroundings, the items you have inside, the items you have outside, what those things mean to you, the colors, all of those things impact the energy. So it's really looking at that energy, what is it doing and how is it affecting the people who live and work in the space?
That's very interesting. So it can also be applied then to landscape design as well as inside your home. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's very powerful as well if used outside.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the ways that people could incorporate feng shui in their garden?
Well, there are many ways that it can be used. First and foremost, it's all about balance. You know, how good we feel if we're in an environment that is balanced. You go to the botanical gardens, for instance, or you sit in a beautiful garden, you know, with flowers, with smells, with perhaps the sound of water and perhaps birds coming in and out. You feel balanced because all of the elements are present. It has a very positive impact on us. But more than that, we can use landscaping to help to protect us from perhaps from some negative energy like a very busy street or sharp pointed angles that may be pointed at our house or something like that. But also it's very important, the energy on the outside of our homes is extremely important because that determines the quality of the energy that comes inside. And then also, you know, when you're living in a space, you want if you can have nice views looking out of the window, so from every window in your house, if you had a beautiful view of your wonderful landscape, then that's going to nurture you and support you even more and bring more good energy to you. So there are many ways that and many purposes, you know, for which we use it on the outside. But it essentially just really helps nurture and support us and helps to create good energy on the inside of the house as well.
And I certainly know what you mean about having a nice view outside. It's just been shown in study after study that it just really helps patients to recover quicker in the hospitals and that it just has such a healing effect. What are some ways that people could protect their home from negative energy, whether it's a busy street or an intersection kind of pointing right at their home?
Well, if it's something like that, the more uplifting energy you have, the better. So trees are excellent because they, you know, they grow tall, they have movement. Trees color is also another way because that brings a very vibrant energy. Bushes can be protection as well. So the more life and movement really that you have, the more you're bringing in good energy and the more you're protecting yourself from any very fast moving energy or energy that may be stuck or not that good, you know, around you. And also even you can use landscaping like trees or bushes to screen something from view that perhaps isn't so positive. You know, if there's something that you're looking at that isn't that great, then you can use landscaping to screen that from your view as well.
That's great. So are there a few examples of how people could apply feng shui just in general to their garden?
Some very easy ways. And let me just give you a couple of examples. One of the things that we say, you know, your front door is the most important part of your home. So the energy that you have coming into the front door needs to be good. And we want that to be very positive, very uplifting energy. So one client that I was working with, he works from home. And he has his own business from home. And he was talking to me about how he was having a great deal of difficulty getting people to do things that he needed to get done. He does, he's an internet marketer. So he, for example, relies on people to create websites for him. So he would find somebody who he thought was the ideal person, and then they wouldn't do what they said they were going to do. They would, take a lot longer than they said. And this kind of thing was happening on a very regular basis. And so I worked with him a long distance, had him send me photographs and floor plan of his house and everything. And one of the things that I noticed was that on the outside, along the pathway leading up to his front door, he had some very sharp, pointy bushes, like holly, you know. Mm-hmm. And while those can be beautiful, you don't really want that sort of energy around your front door. It's not a very friendly kind of energy. So those would be best placed somewhere else, not around the front door. So actually, initially, what I had him do just to soften it, because, you know, he couldn't take the time to go out there and re-landscape the front right away. He just got some pots of some red geraniums and he interspersed them, you know, throughout the bushes just to soften it up a little bit. And really, things changed for him immediately. He found the perfect web person in his words, he said, you know, people just started showing up that were the right people and were more helpful, did what they said they were going to do. So just something very simple like that can actually make a profound difference.
Wow. How do you like that? Yeah. What are some other things? Are there a couple other examples that you have?
You know, we talked a little bit about T-junction, you know, being at the end of a street, but also a cul-de-sac. If you have a house at the very end of a cul-de-sac, think of streets as channels for energy to flow. And so the energy is moving down the street, and then it hits at the end of a cul-de-sac, and there's really nowhere for it to go. So it kind of stays there. And so if your house happens to be that one right at the end of the cul-de-sac, you tend to find, you know, life is a bit of a struggle. You find yourself coming up against obstacles. Life just doesn't seem to flow. Things seem to be more difficult than they need to be. And so there have been many cases where I've worked with people and suggested that they just work with their landscaping, create a lot of life and vibrancy at the front of your house, because then you're creating energy movement, even down to things like, you know, hang a bird feeder on a tree at the front of the house to encourage wildlife to come in. That's just bringing in energy, and it's creating movement. And, you know, as well as trees and bushes and color, you can use things like, you know, flags and banners and whirligigs or wind chimes or a nice waterfall, anything that has movement and sound and life to it. And you really are just creating this wonderful energy and stopping it from kind of just becoming stagnant at the front of your house. And when people do that, they really do find that things start to shift. Things start to move for them. So very, very powerful thing to do.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's really about just having, if you're at the end of the cul-de-sac, having that energy kind of have a chance to move around and surround and not just come right at your house. And
Exactly. And I would say the same if you were, if your street was a dead end and you were right at the end, the last house on that street, same kind of thing.
I've noticed oftentimes that if I'm looking at a house that is in that situation and they've put a nice tree kind of right there to block the intersection, it does seem a bit like the house is more protected from at least a crazy driver running into your house.
Well, absolutely. And if you think of it, you know, the crazy driver, even if you think, okay, at nighttime, a car coming down with the headlights shining right at your house, just think of that being like the energy coming at you all the time. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, a beautiful tree. I love trees because they are wonderful protection. You know, I really appreciate them for that.
Sure. Yeah. And how about the elements? Could you talk just quickly about the importance of incorporating different types of elements into your garden?
Absolutely. There are five main elements that we work with in feng shui. There's fire, water, wood, earth, and metal. And so, you know, typically we have a lot of wood because of plants and because also the color green represents wood and trees. You want to bring in fire, and you can do that obviously with the color red. You can also do that with by bringing birds in, having bird feeders, because birds and animals are represent fire. You could also do that with kind of statues and artwork of animals or people that you have. So those are some ways to bring in fire. And then water, you know, a beautiful water feature or a bird bath, or even it could be something that has a lot of movement to it or hangs down. So those plants that hang down, like a fuchsia, something like that, or even a weeping willow, those also mm-hmm. represent water as well.
Kind of the movement of water,
exactly,
too.
Exactly, right? Yes. And then earth. I mean, obviously we have earth because it's outside and it's a garden, but you can bring in earth through ceramics, through terracotta. Things like that really help to bring in the element of earth. Also, if you had a square or rectangular shaped planter, that would bring in the element of earth. And then not forgetting metal, and that would be through the color white. So making sure you had some white flowers, perhaps, but also through metal, things that are made of metal. So if you had a table and a couple of chairs that were made of metal, or if you had some artwork that was made of metal, those are all ways to bring in metal. But the important thing is that you have all of the elements present, because when they are all present, you know, we are made up of all these elements ourselves, so that when they are all present in an environment, that's when we feel most balanced and most nurtured and supported.
Great. Could you tell me if someone were to call in the experts, because it seems quite a science, so it would certainly seem like you'd have to really learn quite a bit to apply it to a certain degree to your garden after a certain point. And what are some criteria that people should look for when they're hiring a feng shui consultant?
Well, first and foremost, I would want to make sure they are trained. You know, there really isn't any requirement to say, you know, you could go out and take a feng shui workshop and call yourself a practitioner. So I would want to know where they were trained. Do they have specific practitioner training? Because it's one thing to learn a little bit about feng shui, and it's a completely different thing to be able to go and work with people with feng shui, because it's a very, very personal thing. And so, you know, there really is an art to that. So I would want to check their credentials, make sure that they were really certified. But then I would want to see what kind of experience they had and what their specialty is. Because if a feng shui person tells you, just like anybody else, you know, oh, I can work with anybody, I can do any kind of thing, I would be suspicious, because everybody has their own specialty. For example, you know, I don't do interior design. So if somebody's looking to remodel their house and for advice on, you know, furnishings and colors, I would recommend someone who had experience in interior design, or, you know, for whom that was their specialty. That wouldn't be me. So I would make sure that that their qualifications and their experience and their passion, you know, the aspects of feng shui that they're really interested in, are in alignment with what it is that you need and that you're looking for.
And is there a certain kind of certification or or way that you would know that somebody had better qualifications than others?
Well, I wouldn't say the qualification might be better than others. You'd want it to be specifically practitioner training, and there are many good schools out there. So you can ask to see a copy of their certificate. You know, and I'm often asked to fax a copy or mail a copy to people, which I'm more than happy to do. So the school itself, I don't think, is as important, because as long as they've had official practitioner training and not just attended a couple of workshops. For example, I am not an expert in landscaping. I'm expert in feng shui. So if I want to do some landscaping, I call in a landscaper and then I work with them, you know, incorporating feng shui. And one example is that I was looking for a landscaper to help me re-landscape the front of my house. And this was when I lived in St. Louis. And I called a couple of different people. And one particular person told me that he advertised himself as a feng shui landscaper. So he told me he was experienced in this. And so when he came and I asked him, you know, what he would recommend, one of the first things he said was he suggested putting holly along my pathway and near my front door. Well, that in feng shui is an absolute no-no. So, you know, I knew right there that he didn't have the qualifications that I was looking for.
Right. So it sounds like people really need to dig a little deeper and find out that their qualifications that these people have are really going to help them in their particular situation.
Yes, definitely. And trust your intuition, you know, see how you feel about the person. You have to resonate with the person, and the energy has to be a match. I think that's important.
Well, is there anything that you want to add, Linda, that people should think about it? You know, feng shui can seem a little scary. It's a complex, ancient science. And is there any one last tip that you'd want to give the listeners to encourage them to jump into feng shui and start to apply these principles in some way?
I would say, you know, take it one step at a time, learn one thing and apply one thing and take it very slowly. But more importantly, have fun with it. You know, more important than the principles, I would say, is what you like, what you love, what feels good to you. Because if I, as a professional, come in and tell you, you must put this over here or you must do that, but it doesn't feel right to you, then it isn't right for you. Mm. So, you know, trust yourself. Actually, one of the things I do as a practitioner is find the answers within you for your own issues, you know, for whatever's going on with you. I don't come in and tell you what you need to do. You already know. I just have to find those answers within you. So trust yourself.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Trust yourself. Well, thanks so much, Linda, for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Teresa.
Teresa, as always, that was a really, really informative interview, because I have not actually looked into feng shui. I mean, I've heard other friends talk about it, and I was like, oh, it's like this woo-woo topic. And I think to some people, it can be quite overwhelming and intimidating.
Absolutely. And Jamie, it is a complex subject. And I think Linda did a great job of kind of simplifying it in as brief terms as possible. But if you go to my blog, seasonalwisdom.com, I have two articles about feng shui in the garden that incorporate more information from Linda, and particularly describes those five natural elements, earth, wood, water, fire, and metal, and how you can apply those natural elements in a balanced way in your garden, keeping in mind that it's not always easy to put a fire element in, so there are other ways you can recreate fire, you know, without having to burn anything. So for those of you with small gardens, we've thought of you
yeah,
too.
Yeah, let's still start any fires. That's not what Teresa meant.
Exactly. And so that's at seasonalwisdom.com, and you can just click right on the podcast page.
Well, and one of the things I felt was interesting too is, you know, water is, there's many, many different products out there that you can buy to incorporate water. But what I also found interesting when she was talking about the weeping willow, looks like just water cascading down.
It reinforces that element. So I like, for example, she talks a lot about hanging plants, which is the same idea as weeping willows. And that movement of flow is very organic, like water.
Right, so, exactly. So thank
that's
you.
A great example. Yeah.
Well, and I wonder too.
Also, well, I was going to say, isn't it now, after watching that, listening to that, look outside and around your neighborhoods, you're going to see so many fountains flowing away from the building, whether it's a bank or a condominium or whatever. You'll be surprised how many water elements are pushing the water in the wrong direction from the house, because you always want your water to be in the direction of your home. So it's like you're bringing in the chi, you're bringing in the abundance, because water represents abundance.
Oh, interesting.
So make sure that all of your fountains, or whether it's a wall fountain or whether it's a some other kind of fountain, a naturalistic looking water element, make sure it's always coming toward your house rather than away.
Well, there you go. I did not know that.
So this is just one of these other two interviews that we have coming up, Jamie. I know you just spoke with Susan Cohan, who is not just a professional landscape designer, but she has worked as a designer in the fields of women's fashion and jewelry. So she'll be talking a lot about design principles and why sometimes it really is worth it to hire a professional. And then the third guest, I should say, is Christina Salwitz, as we mentioned, from Seattle area. And she's going to be telling you, what is a garden coach and why do you need it? And both Jamie and I have worked with her in the past, and we can tell you she really has a wonderful eye for plants.
You know, and what's really cool, Teresa, is that we found women from different growing regions. So they'll offer advice that, you know, is specific to their areas and whatnot. So,
but also broad enough that could be applied in general. And, you know, for those of you who are looking for good local gardening information, some of your best sources are master gardeners who offer usually a free helpline in your community. And the best place to check is the Cooperative Extension Service, and they'll let you know if they have that, because those master gardeners are trained to provide good, professionally based horticultural information. And what they don't know, they'll go and research for you. So if you're looking for good help, there's a good source. Also, don't forget your nurseries, because they're growing plants that are going to work well in your area, as well as your neighbors.
Yeah, and I'll provide a link how to find your local extension service. It's a nice map that they put up on a website. So you just click your state and click your area, and you can find your local extension service.
Well, great. Well, I think we've had a great show, Jamie, but I got to tell you, my garden's calling me.
You know what? And the rain has stopped. So I think it's time to end this show, and let's get out there and grow something.